Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We're at the Minnesota State Fair. Let's make it sound like that. Hi. It's cool and sunny and aromatic with the smells of pork chops and cotton candy. I always realize how much I miss the pork chop smoke when I'm not here. If you're headed to the fair, you can find us at the corner of Judson and Nelson. At 10 o'clock, we're taking your home repair questions. This hour, we're talking about why young readers are drawn to dark themes in the books they read, and the value of tackling those themes in YA literature. So that's what we're talking about. Writer Carrie Mizrobian is here. We want to hear from you in our fair audience or anywhere else. If you're 16 and under, have there been some books about tough stuff that you've really liked? And parents, I want you to think about this. What kinds of experiences are your kids reading about that make you a little bit uncomfortable? So I want to hear from you if you're 16 or under. Also want to hear from you as parents about maybe some of those books with some of these darker themes on topics that make you feel a little uncomfortable. Your kids are reading them. You're good with that. But maybe it requires a conversation. So here's the phone number. Fairgoers, Tracy Mumford over there with the microphone, okay? We want to hear from you. I see a lot of kids in the audience, so she's going to be working her way over to you. But by the phone to 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And I'm on Twitter at CarrieMPR. You can tweet me there. Carrie Mizrobian is the author of Sex and Violence and Cut Both Ways. And her newest is coming out in March called Just a Girl. And she's with me at the fair. Welcome. I didn't know if we could get you out to the Minnesota State Fair.
Well, I did go see Def Leppard last year.
Did you when you were here?
It was my birthday, so I had to go.
Yeah. Welcome. And happy birthday coming up, right?
Yep.
So it must be within a couple days.
Saturday.
All right. Good to have you here. So I think we should tackle something, Carrie, right off the top, which has been kind of this subtext for this discussion that's gone on about dark themes in YA literature. And that's this idea that if you write it, it's going to make kids do it, right? It's this misassumption about what it means to have darker subjects in YA literature.
Yeah, I don't know, like, is that a question for parents or is that a question for people who care about literature?
Yeah.
My sense is that if your children are reading, you should just, that should be the end of it. You should be happy and move on and get a hobby or something. There's lots of good stuff to watch on Netflix. I don't know. But if you have, if your kid is interested in these kinds of things, it's not necessarily that they want to do them or are experiencing them. They might have friends that are experiencing that. And
right.
It might interest them in that way. And you can't really say, well, don't have friends that have problems, can you? So the idea of them being interested in it, it's a pretty low risk way of dealing with tricky, difficult topics. I think the main people that have issues with content and books are parents that are really, like you said, uncomfortable with conversations that they're going to have. But
right.
When I hear people say, oh, that's inappropriate for children or that's inappropriate for teenagers, I hear, I'm afraid to have a conversation with my kids.
Let's go out to some of the parents in the, I see nodding right there in the middle. Right, hi. Hi.
Hi. I'm a parent and a media specialist in a 6th through 12th grade school.
Yeah.
And my son has read all the Game of Thrones books, and a lot of the books, young adult books, I'll read first, so then I can answer his questions. But one of the first questions he had when he started reading Game of Thrones was, what's a brothel? And if you're not ready to have those conversations...
It's a good question.
It is.
What was your answer to that, by the way?
My answer was that it was a place that people pay to have sex. I've always been very forthcoming with questions from my kids, and especially I've never kept them from reading anything. And I feel proud that I have three adult sons and one teenage son who are all readers.
Do you let him just kind of roam the library or the bookstore or download anything he wants? I mean, are you... You're kind of watching over his shoulder, but there is no limit on what he can read?
No, I don't believe in putting limits because then, number one, as a media specialist, I know the parents who try to put limits on their kids, your kid's going to read it anyways, but then they're not going to talk to you about it.
Let's ask your son what his favorite author is, because we have, if for any young reader in the audience here who tells me their favorite author, you get to go pick out a book, because Tracy brought a bunch of books. So what's your favorite author?
George R.
R. Oh, I should have known. I should have known. What do you think about the idea of the conversation that comes up, because he may be reading kind of ahead of his age group, and she's okay with that?
I think that, again, like, it's not a book question. Should that book have a brothel in it, or should YA books have brothels in them, or sex or violence or drugs? It's really just about, do you want to talk to your kid or not? I feel like these are uncomfortable conversations, but they're, especially sex conversations, are really uncomfortable for adults to have with other adults sometimes.
Yeah.
So
no doubt.
Not a shock that you don't want to talk to your kid about it. And a lot of adults have not thought out and worked out, you know, publicly out loud with their words how they feel about different sexual things.
Is that part of the thing? Like, I don't know what I'm going to say if my son at 8 asks me what a brothel is. I know your son's older than that, but, you know.
Well, there's this really simple rule when you're talking about sex with children. Now, we're not talking about books here, but, like, they ask you a question and you answer the one question. They asked what's a brothel? It's a place where people pay to have sex. If there's a follow-up question,
right. And
like,
then you stop, right?
Why do they do that? Then right. Answer that question, but don't assume that you have to explain everything, like, okay, first the glaciers killed the dinosaurs, and then all of that kind of, you don't have to go back that far. I think the idea of just answering the one question, and if the kid has another one, answer that. But a lot of times young children, they want to know the definition of the word, and then they want to go back to their book.
Yeah.
And so I feel like a lot of times parents don't know where to start. Just answer the one question, and then if they keep asking, answer that one, and then that's how you talk about it. Instead of, let's have a really big, uncomfortable talk where I sit down and look really grave and pained and, you know, like I really would rather be anywhere else. And then we'll talk about sex, and then you get a really nice view of how uncomfortable sex is for me and other people. Like that, just answer the question. It's the same kind of question of why do parents and couples, why are they affectionate? It's a very easy question to answer, but you don't need to start at the beginning. A lot of times we think that we have to start so far back and explain everything. Just answer the one question.
Let me grab a call here from Grace in St. Paul. Grace, you're 13, is that right?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm so glad you called.
This is exciting.
So who are you reading at the moment, and what are you thinking about?
Well, I just finished Peggy Ornstein's new book,
you
Girls
did?
And Sex.
You did? Oh my gosh, you're 13. What'd you think of that? I read it too.
Yeah, it's really interesting, but it has almost an entire chapter, or a few chapters actually, on rape and date rape and college rape. And it was interesting to hear other girls' observations about that and what they think.
How'd your parents feel about you reading that at 13?
Well, my mom's pretty good about talking about stuff like that. So I'm more comfortable talking and reading and learning about stuff and not feeling awkward talking about it to her later.
All right. Hey, I am really glad to have your call. You sound like a sharp young woman. Glad
you
were listening today. Thank you. Out here in the audience, to what Carrie said about having those uncomfortable conversations with your kids, who's had that? Who's experienced that yet? Right back there in the back, Tracy, in the gray t-shirt. Yeah. A dad.
I would disagree just a little bit. I think there's an age appropriateness to conversations, right? So, like you said, starting with the dinosaurs and all that, I think you can answer those age appropriately. So that's what we do at our house. help the kids to choose books that we feel like are age appropriate. So those look different for our 14-year-old than do for our 8-year-old.
And what if your 8-year-old wants to read into the 14-year-old? No?
No.
Oh.
Because, again, age appropriate, right? At some point, they can choose to read in movies and all other media. I feel like there's a time that will become more and more open to them. Our 13-year-old picked a J.D. Salinger book off the shelf, and I said, nah, we're not quite ready for that. That'll come at a time. And and most of that is because I want to shape what's going into his mind.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's what parents should do. I think they should do that for their children that they know the best. They don't get to do that for everyone else's children because 13 looks different across the spectrum. You could have a 13-year-old who has an interest in something or has developed physically in different ways, where 13 is not the same everywhere you go. If you go into a middle school, you see how uneven age 13 looks. And I know my own kid, and I think parents get to make that decision. They get to say, you know, this is probably not the best thing. I think that probably that's not happening as much as it should. I think kids
are... parents are shaping what their kids are reading?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just bottom line grateful that kids are reading at all.
Right.
And I tend to see, like, if a book has topics that aren't of interest to the kid. And I think when they are interested in learning about it is when it's fine.
See that's what I think about the Salinger book. I mean, to have your son or daughter, son, walk over and pluck that off the shelf, that's a leap. And that's important. And what if he never goes back to it?
So I guess I would say we're doing that together. So he's reading Steinbeck and, you know, those
great
types of authors. But I think, and our 12-year-old just read a separate piece. And I guess those are the books that I would much rather read those books. And again, I want him to read, but I want him to read books that I think are going to impact him and influence him in ways that I think are positive.
Yeah. Well, you're obviously encouraging great reading in your house. I'm glad you were here. Thanks. To the phones to Sammy in Minneapolis. Hey, Sammy. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Glad you called in. What are you thinking about this?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have had the pleasure of growing up in different countries and to know that societies are different when it comes to education or having material to read honestly fascinates me. At a young age, I didn't have the opportunity to go to school or to have a proper education because my family was worried about survival and keeping us kids alive enough to have a future.
Mm-hmm.
So coming to the U.S. was kind of an eye-opener to have so many different books where so many different individuals and different authors can shed a light on other people's world. It was a dream come true to have someone who has the same story as I had in my young age and to have them live in a different country on the other side of the world, in a way gave me the opportunity to connect to that person, but at the same time to realize that I need to be sympathetic to other people's lives, to other people's struggles, and to have such stories written down, to have the opportunity to have my children someday in the future read those books and say, I may have everything that I need right now, but people have struggled. People have had to live in a life so grim that they made this society great for us.
Wow.
And
what
to read
call.
Those books,
right.
Thank you. And to read those books at a young age, in my point of view, feels as if we're teaching our kids to be grateful, to have a nurturing heart, to give something back to community, even if it means living through in someone else's life by reading a book.
Sammy, perfect. I mean, what you're really talking about is building empathy, and I think that's the experience. I mean, you've written about Carrie Cutting, right?
No.
Oh, I thought you had.
No.
Ah.
But there's a lot of books in the YA genre that deal with cutting.
Right. Which is not something that a lot of teens themselves are going to experience, but to
right.
have
But they're going to know about
for,
it.
That's right. To have empathy for a friend that's going through something like that.
And I think, like, the other thing is that all reading is in some ways an exercise in empathy. And do we want to foster that in kids? I think that we're really kind of being ridiculous when we think that if a kid reads about a character who makes poor decisions or isn't likable or hasn't learned how to be a decent, proper human being at the age of 16, which good luck with that. if the kids read something like that, then they're going to go, oh, this is a blueprint for how I should act. Like you were saying, like this is an instruction manual, not a three-dimensional world that they're entering and thinking about as imaginatively. And I think that is a different kind of conversation where you can say, well, why would you make that choice? What is going through the head of someone who's doing self-harm or who has an eating disorder? What's going through the head of somebody that is from a different culture or country or background than I am? How am I different? How are they the same? These are places to start the conversation. I don't know that you should be afraid of that, but it's difficult.
I think this really comes up around suicide. Parents, yes. Really uncomfortable. And there are a number of young adult books out there about suicide.
One of the things with young adult books with suicide that I think is important specifically is talking about suicide and suicidal ideation is, the research shows, if you talk about it, the likelihood of it happening is lowered. It's when you don't talk about it, when a person keeps all that inside and they don't bring it out and there's no discussion of depression and there's no discussion of wanting to hurt yourself, the talking about it and making it a topic of conversation is not harmful. It's actually very helpful in those situations. Some YA books have dealt with suicide in ways that I find kind of unrealistic, or I find it romanticizing. Like, it seems really glamorous because I'm going to, have a suicide pact, for example, with somebody that I'm having a relationship with, and it seems romantic. So there are ways of looking at those books that deal with suicide that there are some that I think are better than others.
Right.
But there's a kind of responsibility on the part of the author and the publisher to try to get those things right instead of plugging into boring cliches and stereotypes and romanticization of something that really is not romantic and is hurts families and is horrible. So that's one thing. But I think having the books themselves is not a bad thing. Even if it's a poor depiction of suicidality, you can still say, well, this doesn't make sense. This is a depressed person. Why are they going around making some sort of, email chain of all of this stuff that they want everyone to know about, but they didn't tell any, things that don't match up with being suicidal and being depressed. That kind of drives me nuts. But I don't think having them as a topic is a bad thing at all.
This is The Thread at the Minnesota State Fair, and we're talking about young adult literature out here in our booth at the corner of Judson and Nelson. We wanted to dive in a little deeper here about why darker themes in YA literature, why young readers seem to be drawn to them. What's the value of them? What's the concern among parents for them? If you're 16 and under and you're listening to the show or you're out here at the fair, have there been some books about tough stuff that you've liked as a young reader? Or parents, what kinds of experiences are your kids reading about that make you a little uncomfortable? What kinds of conversations have started because of that? 651-227-6000 to call in, 800-242-2828. And out here in the fair audience, Tracy Mumford is over there with the microphone. And if you speak, you get to pick out a book. Helena. Right? Hey, hi.
My name is actually pronounced Helena.
Oh, Helena. Thank you.
But what I want to say is my favorite author is probably Kristen Cashore. Her books talk about, I think the main character is usually an 18-year-old girl or a 17-year-old girl. And they usually have something that was hard in their life that usually takes place in a fantasy universe.
Did you say a fantasy universe?
Yeah.
Like
a made-up world, essentially.
Right.
But
So what's interesting to you about this character facing, some pretty tough challenges in a made-up world?
Well, I think her book Fire. The main character's name is Fire, and she has, like, I don't know how to describe it, but she lives in, like, a place where there's gonna, like, the kingdom she lives in is essentially on the verge of, like, a three-way war.
Huh.
And she has to, like, help save everything, but then there's also other things in there, too.
That sounds like a pretty big responsibility for her.
But then, I don't know, there's a lot of prejudices against her because of who her father was. He, like, caused that three-way war almost.
That's complex.
That Kristen Keshore is a really good author of fantasy YA novels, and her books always have the same kind of experience that you could say is very adolescent, where you are trying to take responsibility for things that you did not maybe do and try to fix them. And all of those books have heroines that are really trying to, they're in terrible situations, and they some of them have abilities that are kind of supernatural, and they have to learn how to control them. They're wonderful books, I think.
See, what I'm interested in, Carrie, is the juxtaposition of kind of the real world challenges that kids are going to confront. Now, not resolving wars, but the feeling of responsibility on that in a fantasy-like landscape. I mean, what's the attraction to that?
I think it's because it's another reason why people like to read spy novels or mysteries or romance novels. This has nothing to do with their actual life.
Right.
So there will be some young readers who will say, you know, I don't want to read contemporary books about teenagers. I have enough of that data coming into my data stream. I don't want any more. I'd like to read about a girl who is, you know, a dragon or fights a war in a different world that does not look anything like my high school or my middle school. So there's that kind of escape, but there's the same, you know, kind of heroic questions and dilemmas that they would have to you know, get over or mull through or muddle through, that is still very attractive. It's the same age generally. And also sometimes you can see in those fantasy novels, people doing amazing things that teenagers might feel like, you know, I can barely raise my hand in class. So this is amazing to watch and beautiful, and it's kind of aspirational.
Carrie Mizrobian, by the way, is our guest out here at the fair. She's the author of Sex and Violence and a new book coming out in March called Just a Girl. I saw hands up out there. Yeah. Hi.
Hi, my name is Lena.
Hi. How old are you?
12.
Okay, glad you came.
My favorite author is Sarah Shepard. She wrote Pretty Little Liars.
Aha. And what do you like about that book?
I like the mystery. They deal with a lot of hard stuff in the book.
Like what? Yeah, that's what we're talking about today.
Well, their friend goes missing. There's five girls in high school, and one of their friend goes missing, and they have to deal with this person that, well, there's a person sending them texts, like, that are threatening them.
This sounds kind of scary.
Yeah.
You like that about the book? Have your parents ever been worried that you're reading a book about somebody getting abducted and threatening a group of friends?
I don't think so.
Well, I mean, I think like that, again, that's the same reason we go on roller coasters and in haunted houses. And we just finished watching my family watching Stranger Things, which was very scary on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I think all of that, I mean, it's part of the thrill. Like, you're just sitting at home, you know, on your sofa reading, and you get to experience this idea of, well, what would happen if my friend was abducted and how would you deal with that? And it's exciting and mysterious. It keeps you turning pages. And I think Pretty Little Liars, like, all of that, I think there's a TV show affiliated with it. Like, all of it is great. Just getting people to realize it's fun to read and it feels good and it's exciting. And
hey, I hope you'll pick out a book over there. Thanks very much for talking about your favorite book. Let me take a call on the phone lines because we've got a lot of people that want to get in on this, to Nancy in Minneapolis. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Well, I wanted to make one comment tying back to a few minutes ago when you and your guests were talking about suicide ideation and the potential risk to exposing teenagers or even younger to these themes. And what I wanted to say is, as someone myself who has dealt with depression and off and on bouts of suicide ideation my entire life, for me, reading books and seeing movies, for that matter, that exposed me to that theme did not in any way motivate me or send me down a path, obviously, to take advantage of that. Rather, it did the opposite, and it made me feel less alone and less isolated. And so for that reason, I think it would be a mistake to not allow young children to be exposed to that theme. And if it weren't relevant to them, I think they would just kind of dismiss it. It's not like someone who's not inclined to think about that or do anything like that is suddenly going to think about it when they're exposed to it.
Nancy, do you remember a couple of the books that were really helpful to you in that time?
Oh, boy. You know, I remember one, and this was actually in college. I remember one called The Basketball Diaries, but that is not going to be, that's going to be for later age.
Right.
I can't recall off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
I really appreciate the call, though. It's a good point.
I think that there's a couple of caveats I would give you about content. Everyone knows what might set them off, or you might not be in the mood for a certain topic, or it might not be a great time to read about grief if you just had a death in your family, and you might want to read something else. Books that deal with eating disorders, however, there is some anecdotal evidence that those books are used as manuals for people that have eating disorders.
Manuals in what way?
That the details, the diet tips, the ways you fool your doctor, that has been documented. There's a really good book called How to Disappear Completely, which is a kind of overview of literature that deals with eating disorder and the treatment of eating disorder in the 20th century, I guess it was. And it talks about how a lot of times girls especially will use these books to, this girl had a feeding tube in the book. I'm going to aspire to that because of the nature of eating disorders being very aspirational, and I want to be the best at having disordered eating.
So there's kind of like a dark glamour in some ways to this?
Specifically with that. But again, I wouldn't say, well, we shouldn't have those books, because if you have a friend or a family member dealing with that and you don't understand it, that'd be a great way for you to develop empathy about the situation. But I know that those books definitely, in the hands of people that have anorexia, bulimia, and so on, are dangerous because they give them more ideas and strategies for remaining sick. That would be one thing you would have to make that decision about your own kid. But that is something that has been shown.
Let me go back out into the audience. Hi. Hey, what's your name? How old
are you? I'm 12.
Okay, good to have you here. What do you like to read?
Well, one of my favorite books right now is called Eleanor and Park.
Oh, yeah. We had, is it Rainbow?
Rowell?
Yeah, we had her on the show. Mm. Why do you like it?
Well, it's about a girl who has an abusive father, and like everybody bullies her at school, and she sort of finds sanctuary in a boy that she meets named Park. And it's really well written, and just like it's a really good story.
Yeah. So the idea of the abusive father wasn't too much for you to read about?
Not really.
How come?
I don't know. He mostly just abused her mom, not really her, but yeah.
Hard stuff to read though, sometimes, right? Please pick out a book. Thanks very much. Right over there. To the phones, to Ellen in Brooklyn, Maine. Is that right?
Yes.
Hey, Ellen. Hi. Glad you called in. You were listening.
Yes, I am. I have friends in Minnesota who tipped me off to this show. I just had a couple of comments. One, I actually write for younger teens, and there's an organization here in New England called Children's Literature New England that is actually sponsoring a symposium on a question similar to what you're examining. Okay. It's called Passages of Hope. Mm-hmm. And the key question is whether it is possible to present hopeful narratives that are also authentic in this day and age. And I guess my point is that this is something that authors don't take lightly. I mean, these are very important questions for all of us in terms of what we owe to our readers. And it seems to me that in the bleakest of YA books, the characters always grow. And where there's growth, there's going to be hope. And to me, that is the essential factor that we owe our readers, is just to give them, you know, show them people dealing with these issues, but also showing them some hope.
You know, I'm really glad you brought this up. I wanted to talk about the idea that the YA book doesn't have to have the happily ever after kind of ending, but it does seem that authors are committed to infusing some of these darker stories with that, with, as you say, Ellen, that underlying sense of optimism.
Exactly. And I will also just say that I learned just yesterday that a friend of mine's fifth grade daughter came home with a version of Little Women in which Beth does not die.
Wow.
And I was horrified.
I was going to say.
To me that we do a disservice to kids if we're not letting them watch characters deal with it, reality.
Agreed. How dare they change? What are you thinking, Carrie? Ellen, thank you.
I think there are a lot of authors who are motivated by, you know, they either work with a lot of kids, and so they are interested in writing these books for kids as a way to help them through the struggle that is growing up. I'm not one of those authors. I teach kids and I teach teenagers, and I want the best for them, and I want them to read, and I want them to, you know, grow. But I'm aware that growing doesn't stop when they're 18. Reaching closure with your problematic family members doesn't stop when you're 18. The experience of racism and injustice doesn't stop when you're 18. And so I feel like your whole life there's a whole bunch ahead of you. And I want the best for actual living human teenagers, but in the books, I don't really care that much if the book ends on a note of hope or if the good guidance counselor steps in
But Carrie, isn't there some sense of, as Ellen suggested, character growth, and that the teenager is figuring this out in a way that they can live with that?
Yeah, I think we like to see that just on a fictional level.
Absolutely.
Otherwise it feels like you've read something static and nothing happened.
Right.
But I think the idea of like having full self-actualization when you're 16 is a little crazy, because we are, you know, I'm going to be 42 in a couple days, and I don't think I've gotten there yet. So, but I think the other thing is that not just young people read young adult literature. Adolescence is a difficult time for everybody, and it clings to you. The stuff that happened to you or didn't happen to you, the things that were the decisions that you made, the statements made about your identity, that stays with you. And adults want to read about that time because they're not over it. It's like saying your childhood, just get over it. But no, you're still mulling over all of those messages you got from your family and your peers and your teachers and whatever. And so adults reading YA can also see that.
You know, actually, I'd like to ask our audience, how many of you in the audience as adults are reading some YA literature? Yeah, a fair number of hands here. Okay, right out there, Tracy, for a question.
We've got a mother-daughter reading pair.
All right,
here.
Good.
What's your favorite book?
Magic Treehouse.
Magic Treehouse? Okay.
And she's dealing with some grandparents that are at end of life issues, and we are helping her cope with that with a book called Lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't exactly remember the author, but it's all about all the different creatures, including human beings, and how long we have here on Earth, and that there's a set time, and We're not responsible for knowing what that time is, but we have to support each other through that.
So the book's kind of guiding your conversation about this?
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's so great because sometimes it's really hard to talk about these hard issues with respect to yourself, but you can use the book as a kind of emotional cover and talk about the animals in the book instead of the real people, because that is so painful, especially when it comes to sex and sexuality and sexual identity. Young people sometimes don't want to disclose that to other people, but they can talk about the characters in a way that gives them a little bit of distance. And it's a really good thing, I think.
On the phone here, Josie. Josie, you're 13, is that right?
Yes.
I'm glad you called. So tell me about the kind of books that you read.
I'm really into stuff like, well, I'm really into Margaret Atwood, for one.
Wow.
I just finished The Handmaid's Tale.
That's
really
excellent.
Like,
you're getting applause out here, Josie, for that. Nicely done. What else?
I also read Out of My Mind recently, and Of Mice and Men.
Wow. And so, yeah, so what draws you to Margaret Atwood and a book like Of Mice and Men?
I actually have a disabled younger brother, and Of Mice and Men and Out of My Mind kind of helped me realize that people like my brother can fit into society, because I really do worry about that for him some days.
Right.
Because he fits in just fine at home, but I worry about sometimes that when he goes out, people won't understand him. And Of Mice and Men realized that we have to teach him to act like appropriately in front of people. And Out of My Mind taught me that he can be normal. He can have friends, and he can act like a normal, well, not normal, he is normal, but he can act like an ordinary person.
And this is the kind of thing that a book friends. Yeah, that a book helps you think through. Maybe.
Well, and have hope. The idea of hope again coming up. A lot of times we don't see populations like that, people with disabilities, portrayed positively in any way. And so the dominant narrative is, oh, this is a horrible, sad thing, poor you. But you can see that in a book sometimes. Actually, no, there are other possibilities, which is another way of kind of gaining an empathetic response to that. And also kind of seeing the possibility for your own life when you're young, that there are many different routes you could take.
We're at the Minnesota State Fair. It's the thread at the State Fair, and we're talking about YA literature and some of the darker themes that young readers are often drawn to, and exploring why that is and the value of it and the conversations that that creates between young readers and parents. And this is so great. We're hearing from so many young readers. If you're 16 and under, I am just really thrilled to be hearing about what you're reading and why you're reading it. And maybe it's starting chats with your parents and your friends. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Anyone out here, young reader, 16 and under, gets to pick out a book if you tell me about your favorite author or your book. And then for parents, I'd like to hear about a conversation that, as we heard a few minutes ago, that a book has helped you start with your young reader, that it gave you guideposts in a way to talk about some difficult stuff. So that's also on the phones, and that's out here at the fair. I've got a tweet here from a listener who says, what? There's a version of Little Women where Beth doesn't die? Crying is cathartic and enjoyable and instills empathy. Yes. And another listener here says, talking about teen suicide books, Carrie Misrobian, yes, helps. Hearing from another listener here via email that helps start that conversation with a friend who was in trouble. Tracy, right over there. Hey, Amy Lindgren.
Hello.
Hey, Amy.
Hi. Say, Carrie, I've known for a long time how hard you've worked at your craft, and I have a question that might be for young people, but I'm thinking of older people as well. I'm wondering about the creative spark. and how you keep it going, because I know there's a lot of tips out there for people about the discipline of writing, setting aside time, but I'm wondering, how do you stay creative or keep that when you've got other things that you have to attend to as well?
Well, I guess there's a lot of different schools of thought, and the way I look at it is that it should be kind of a exciting, fun, joyous process, writing and reading as well. When you start to look at it as work and have to, it's when you start to get blocked up. I often tell students who are saying, oh, I want to write this scene, but I'm stuck writing this scene where they're going through the mountains or whatever. And I'm like, well, then just summarize it. It took us 2 weeks to go through the mountains, and then jump to the fun part that you want to write about. And I think that you can carry that over to the whole thing. Like, what exactly interests you and excites you, and what makes you want to get out of bed in the morning? That's the thing that I would want to focus on. When it comes to being a freelance writer, sometimes you have to write what people want you to write, and it's not that interesting, and that's hard. but
that's not your fiction. You're talking about other projects.
No,
right.
And that can be difficult. But I think like the idea of like always going to what feels juicy, trying to make sure that you are reading things that you think are fun and not just for work or your self-improvement or research or whatever. I find writing to be really enjoyable, and it feels really good. And so I try to focus on what makes me feel good. I know that's not a great message. Like, we don't usually tell people to just do whatever feels good. But in this case, it really keeps me working, and it's a great motivator. So
Joelle at 22 called in to say she grew up in a family that had no barriers on what she was able to read. That's actually how I grew up, too. My mother is now appalled at some of the stuff I was reading at a certain age. She says, Joelle says she thinks that not doing that leads to a lot of silence on things later in life that are controversial or uncomfortable. Tracy, out in the audience.
Hi. I'm wondering what's happened over the past few years that's caused this proliferation of great literature for young adults.
I know.
I went from Judy Blume to Stephen King.
Yeah.
There was nothing
else
to read.
Yeah, exactly. I know it's such a great time to be a young adult reader that I think we didn't have. What do you think has gone on with that, Carrie?
Well, I think first Harry Potter happened.
Yeah.
And then that kind of blew the door off people feeling embarrassed to read young people's fiction. And then Twilight happened, and that was another wave of people realizing that books could be fun. You didn't have to be a teenager to read them. And that just kind of alerted publishers that there's this market of people who wanted these books. I also think Oprah kind of left a little bit of a vacuum when her book club or her show ended.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of a convergence of all of those things. But I think also that this idea of we're going to not... Reading isn't going to be work. It's not going to be some book about the great American experience, and it's not going to feel that it could be fun and thrilling. I think that's kind of what happened, and I think that's how we should start kids on reading. I don't really think we should start them on classics necessarily. Some kids will like that, but I think they should first learn that this feels good. It's really fun. It does a lot of different great things for your brain, certainly, but that it feels good, and that it's a pleasure. But I think in America, we're kind of like, oh, reading, you're just laying there quietly, not getting anything done. And so it looks like laziness.
Really?
I think some people are like that. Oh. Yeah.
You're going to appreciate something that John Green, who wrote The Fault in Our Stars, has an interesting take on, you know, the combinations of books that teenagers read. He says, one of the things I love about teenagers is they don't make those distinctions between high culture and low culture. It's not uncommon for teenagers to list their two favorite books as Gossip Girl and The Great Gatsby. I love that because at that age, it's novelty, for one thing, that's drawing you in. And it's hopefully no judgment. right?
Well, and I also think
about the experience.
They want to be perceived as adults. Yeah. I've had students tell me, yeah, I love David Foster Wallace's Infinite Jest. It's my favorite book. And I think, oh, you know, I don't think I could ever get through that.
Yeah, same here.
But it's aspirational. Like, look at how I'm going to try this, and this is what adults read. So there's that aspect of it, too.
Right out there in the audience. Hi, how are you? Good to see you.
I'm an English teacher.
Yes.
And our discussion is often whether kids will read at all. So I would just want to point out that sometimes it's those really gritty books that get kids who've stopped reading to start reading again.
Ah.
And then we get them into other things beyond that.
Why have they stopped reading? I mean, what's your experience with that?
I'm not quite sure. I think they get busy. I think they get assigned books that they don't think relate to them. And then when they can read the stuff that is, especially kids who are in troubled situations, I think when they can read stuff and say, that's me, then they get involved again.
This is what I wondered about, whether it's some of the classics, right, that don't feel relevant, that we think, well, you are a well-rounded student if you're reading Salinger and some of the others, but they feel distant from experience. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
If you, a good rule of thumb, if you've got a reluctant reader, go to your local library, ask the teen librarian which books get repeatedly stolen, and then give your kids, give that reluctant reader those books, because the books that get stolen, like Ellen Hopkins books, for example, those tend to be the gritty reads that, that kids really like, and they don't want to let go of it. And so that would be a one thing I would suggest.
I think we did our reluctant reader show a couple weeks ago. I think you tweeted in maybe during that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the list, by the way, the list that we developed is on the thread. I want to say that. So it was a really good list with a lot of different experience and a lot of grit on that list. So right out there in the audience. Hi.
My name is Andrew. My two favorite books are Percy Jackson and Harry Potter.
Why Harry Potter and why Percy Jackson?
They both have really intense actions and a lot of fun corners to do stuff.
Yeah, they have to figure stuff out, right, when they have a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you read all the Percy Jackson books?
Yeah.
Wow. There's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Would you pick out a book from our stack over there?
Sure.
Thanks. Thanks for saying that. To the phones, here to Kathy in Winona. Hey, Kathy, thanks so much for waiting. I know it's been a while.
That's okay.
Hi. You have a mother-daughter book club, is that right?
Well, not currently. My daughter's now 27, so she's sort of outgrown that. But between, I can't remember if it was 6th or 7th grade, and when she graduated from high school, we started a mother-daughter book club. There were a variety of ages, and it started some of the best conversations I had with my daughter.
What do you think you talked about through books that you wouldn't have been able to talk about?
Oh, my gosh. Everything. I mean, we had talks about sex. We had talks about just how they felt about things.
Right.
What the characters would do and how they felt about the characters. One of the best books we did was, believe it or not, a biography of Eleanor Roosevelt.
And what kind of a discussion did that lead to?
We started talking about who are our heroines today.
Oh, right.
And who's doing those kinds of things today.
Right.
So it got into more, you know, what's going on. But anyway, it was a really wonderful time. The girls would talk almost as if they forgot their mothers were there.
That's a good thing. You sound like you miss that a little bit, Kathy.
Oh, sure, I do. Still have good talks with my daughter, but it was just, we got to know the girls in ways we would not have gotten to know them if we were just their friend's mom.
Wow, I really appreciate the call. And I love the idea of that, Carrie, eavesdropping on how your kids are talking about books without having to guide the conversation.
Right. I think the idea of it being fun again is the real hook. And the other part is just the idea of if you are reading, your kids are going to read, or they're going to see that as a viable activity.
You're kind of modeling it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So if
that
you're
came
hoping,
up with the reluctant reader show.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to do it yourself if you want them to do it. So
right. How many people are in a book club out here in our audience? Yeah. Okay. Not as many as I would have thought. Why, for some of you who care about reading, but you're not in a book club, just no time? Too busy? Yeah. Amy, yeah? She looks guilty about that. Right over there, Tracy. Hey.
Hi. Well, I was hoping to share what I believe my reason for reading one of my favorite books is.
I'd like to hear it.
My favorite series is it's called Wings of Fire. It's about dragons and stuff.
Yeah.
And what I really like about it is that it's characters. It has five really main characters. And what I like about it is that those characters are, there's a wide variety of personality there. And each of the characters kind of seems to try to at least partially make up part of the reader's kind of personality.
Oh, really? What? So the characters are expressing what the kinda, reader might be thinking and doing.
Like each of the different characters.
Wow.
But I also like that it's doing that and making it relatable without having it be too plain and blatant.
Yeah. Did you say that the characters are dragons?
Yeah.
Yeah. Will you pick out a book right over there? Are dragons, vampires, zombies still hot stuff in YA literature?
I think so. I don't think that's ever going away for adults or kids. I think...
You don't think it's ever going away?
It's never
really?
Going away.
Why?
I just think, like, zombies are, you know, there are worries about infection and disease, and vampires are problems with mortality, and I don't know.
Yeah, but these are kids. What's with the dragons?
Well, because kids know about all of these things anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what dragons are. I think dragons are like just having, like, an animal that is very powerful. It's the same reason kids are... infatuated with dinosaurs, I think.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess I have never encountered a dragon that I didn't think was totally awesome. So
I don't think I was reading about dragons and vampires at that age. Maybe just because there was not a lot of YA literature out there about it.
I think if you like horror, like I started, I did Judy Blume and then jumped to Stephen King as well.
Did you?
Yeah. So I think if you're into that kind of thing, then you might be naturally ready for it. But yeah.
I want to try to squeeze in Tom, I only have a couple of minutes left here, but I wanted to hear what you had to say. Hi.
Yeah, hi. First off, thanks for all you do for literacy in our community. It's been great watching. I am a clinician, and I don't work with kids at all in my rehabilitation practice, but I recognize that, you know, kids become our adults in this world, and a lot of important thought patterns and behaviors begin to establish in late adolescence and early 20s.
Right.
One thing I was thinking about with this is a theme that comes up in rehabilitation practice for me is adults minimizing their problems, comparing, you know, their life issues with people who have much, you know, perceived larger problems. And when you were talking about themes in YA literature like abuse and abduction, how does one bring up or push forward the idea that the problems that kids face in their lives, maybe even if they seem minor compared to some of these themes, are still important?
Carrie, what would you say? Good question, Tom.
I think that that's also the kind of reductive thinking where people think, oh, well, you shouldn't be depressed because people are starving in this world. Everyone you meet's carrying a big load, and you might not know about it, and you might learn about it in a book, but the idea is that it is just as serious to kids, even if you've been through that and you see how it's not that big of a deal. I think, again, it goes back to having empathy for kids and young people and the things that they're working on.
Carrie, thank you. Really good to have you here.
Thanks for
having
me.
And good luck with the book coming out. So come in and chat with us when the new book comes out in March.
Thanks for having me.
And for anybody, I think we have some books left, one or two. Please pick them out, and thanks for being here.